Good morning. This is 91.3 KUAF, your home for Sunday programs like This American Life with Ira Glass. You can hear it this morning at 10, right after Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Later this morning on Weekend Ozarks, what a survey about sexual assault reveals. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has that report in about 12 minutes. First this morning, a new report that came out this month and was commissioned by the Walton Family Foundation shows Northwest Arkansas's downtowns are growing, which comes with increased demand for residential and commercial development. The data also reaffirms the need for additional affordable housing options in both Benton and Washington counties. The University of Arkansas Faye Jones School of Architecture and Design is playing a role in brainstorming ways to meet that need as part of its Housing Northwest Arkansas initiative. That initiative is funded by a $250,000 grant from the Walton Foundation. Part of the project was an affordable housing symposium held earlier this month in Bentonville and Fayetteville. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek was there, and she has this report.
Let's start with what the housing market and transportation in Northwest Arkansas look like right now. Here's Stephen Luoni, the director of the University of Arkansas Community Design Center, and Sean Donovan, the former Secretary of Housing and Urban Development under President Obama.
Northwest Arkansas is the most unequal metro area in Arkansas. The top 1% make 33 times more than the bottom 99%. The national average is 25 times. So we're a third above that and rising.
Your average family spends about 26% of their income on housing. That's actually better than most places. But the average family in this region spends 29% of their income on transportation. Remarkable. More than 50% higher than the average in the United States.
We're growing at the rate of 12,000 people annually, which means we'll require 8,000 new units over the next 3 years, and we're only building 1,000 units. So we're radically undersupplied, even at the level of the market rate housing. In the rental market, we'll need close, over the next 3 years, in the rental market, we'll need close to 5,000 units. Currently, 1,500 are under construction.
So while Northwest Arkansas and the state in general still have a reputation for affordability, the statistics mentioned by speakers at the symposium point to real problems in the region. The income inequality skews the housing market in favor of upper middle and high earners, leaving large supply gaps in lower to middle class housing. And while the average Northwest Arkansas family spends less on housing, the amount it spends on transportation is 10% higher than the national average. Together, those two costs add up to more than half of a family's income. Finally, there's just not enough housing to go around. Here's Stephen Luoni again.
The vacancy rate in Northwest Arkansas for housing is 0.39%, and in downtowns currently it's effectively 0%. There's simply no supply available. A healthy vacancy rate for a region for a housing market is around 6-7%.
As many speakers noted, they weren't at the symposium to necessarily offer solutions, as what works in one community may not work in another. But they were there to offer ideas. And luckily, they said, Northwest Arkansas is still in a position to tackle its problems before they get out of hand. Here's Sean Donovan.
I've seen across this country, and in fact, across the world, that as cities flourish, there are downsides, that if you don't pay attention to them, they can actually undermine the very success that has led to the growth of your communities, of your cities, of your towns.
Donovan used California as a cautionary tale. A recent study showed the state lost about 3 points of its gross domestic product because it doesn't have the range of housing necessary for the range of workers critical to the economy of California's communities. In places like Silicon Valley, the average worker can't afford to live where they work. So, Donovan says, many commute as much as 2 hours one way.
The fundamental job of a successful region that cares about an issue like this is to figure out how to leverage the very success that is creating pressure in order to create the resources for affordable housing.
Symposium speakers agreed creating and keeping affordable housing means ramping up construction in creative ways that involve partnerships with local governments, nonprofits, foundations, and businesses. Lisa Sturtevant is a consultant and a senior fellow with the Urban Land Institute.
One of the biggest challenges to ensuring that there's housing affordable to people of modest incomes is that the gap, right, between the cost of building housing and the revenue generated by providing that housing at lower rents or prices often is difficult to meet.
Sturtevant gave several examples of how partnerships can overcome that challenge. One was in Arlington County, Virginia, where county leaders wanted to redevelop a community center.
They saw the potential to do something more than just rebuild the community center. They said, what if we increase the density? What if we change the zoning? What if we found a partner? And then we could build housing as part of the entire redevelopment effort.
So Sturtevant says they entered into a partnership with a nonprofit developer. The county provided the land for significantly below market rate, and the nonprofit was able to build more than 120 units for low-income families, including 13 units of permanent supportive housing for those transitioning out of homelessness. Another partnership Sturtevant highlighted is in Fairfax, Virginia. It involved the local economic development authority, George Mason University, and the state.
George Mason was increasingly having trouble attracting faculty and staff and even graduate students to its campus because of the high cost of housing in the Northern Virginia suburbs.
But Sturtevant says the university had access to land, so they decided to build rental housing on campus. Enter Masonvale, which has more than 150 units. Sturtevant also talked about inclusionary zoning, like the mandatory policy in Montgomery County, Maryland, that's been in place since the 70s. Every new housing development in that area has to provide a percentage of units that are affordable to households earning between 60 and 80% of the area median income.
And these types of policies are very attractive to communities where, like Northwest Arkansas, where there's a run-up in home prices and there's a real concern about folks of more modest incomes having the availability to access that new housing.
That kind of policy, though, would have to be codified in a local zoning ordinance. The common thread through all of Sturtevant's examples was the affordability of land, something Garner Stoll, the director of development services for the city of Fayetteville, also talked about. Stoll moved to the area last year from Austin, where he was the assistant director of neighborhood planning and zoning. Austin, he says, is a city where housing and transportation costs have regularly exceeded incomes. Stoll, too, had recommendations for our region.
I think make public land available for housing is number one. You can do it with a great deal of precision. You can do it with a great deal of fairness. And you can make the attainable housing long range. The affordability can be many, many years.
Stoll says public land could mean vacant surface parking lots in old school buildings and airports, but it could also mean redeveloping fire stations or libraries to include housing. But he adds part of turning that creativity into reality will mean working on regulatory reform.
And if it's not being built, we need to ask the question, why isn't it being built, and propose alternatives and be bold.
Stoll also suggested raising public funding, an idea that was also brought up by Sean Donovan, who says some communities, like New York City, set aside a portion of their property taxes.
We had a surcharge, essentially, on property taxes, or a piece of the existing property tax that was dedicated to affordable housing.
Several speakers also brought up the need for smaller housing projects, the so-called missing middle housing. Here's Stephen Luoni with the U of A Community Design Center.
This is a class of architecture, a class of multifamily walk-up housing types that we're all familiar with, townhouses, courtyard housing, bungalow houses, mansion apartment, duplexes, fourplexes.
Luoni says the problem is developers haven't built that kind of housing since the 1940s because of obstacles posed by city regulations and financing, which is how many regions ended up with either single-family home developments or large-scale apartment complexes. And as John Anderson, who is an architect and co-founder of the Incremental Development Alliance, pointed out, those missing middle projects will have to be taken up by local developers because major developers likely won't be interested in them.
So when we say incremental development, what are we talking about? That's anything from the pop-up tent selling the tamales that you and your abuela made to the little rehab one-story building, two-story, maybe three, probably no elevator. Often rehab. These are often the missing teeth.
Anderson says incremental development is also what ends up creating wealth in a community. Tied into these conversations about housing, there were also conversations about transportation. To recap, stats show Northwest Arkansans are spending more of their incomes on transportation than on housing. And as the economy shifts from one based on industry to one based on information, former HUD Secretary Sean Donovan says we're also reaching the bounds of the automobile geography.
We're really beginning to reach the limits of that. And in many places, frankly, we've gone well beyond those limits.
Just like finding ways to tackle housing issues, Donovan says cities are getting creative and moving away from looking at public transportation in the form of buses and trains.
We've got cities experimenting across the country with micro transit, the very same technology that has made Uber and Lyft, you know, incredibly valuable companies, allows us to rethink transit in the way that we've traditionally thought about it. I would encourage you to really get creative and look around the country and even around the world at some of the more interesting sort of new forms of transit that are coming together.
And while Donovan could give examples of communities that are not doing so well on the housing and transportation front, it was hard for him to find an example of a place that's doing everything right.
To be frank, I've never seen the perfect community. there's no one city, I would say, now that's the place you got to go and look at.
Northwest Arkansas may or may not become that place, but at least we have a lot of ideas to work with. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Susanna Sitek.
Other players in this conversation are University of Arkansas students studying at the Fay Jones School of Architecture and Design. The grant from the Walton Family Foundation also funds a studio course focusing on affordable housing. There are 25 students, and they've been at it for the last 3 weeks. Jeannie Blair Luft is one of them. She's in her fourth and final year of studying interior design.
This is not what I thought I'd be doing at all. When people think of interior design, they think of you're picking out colors and pillows and stuff like that. That is not what we do at all here. It's more on like how you can modulate light and how you can bring the closest proximities to things and how you can really change how people act and live and breathe in a space.
Right now, the students are working in groups on four theoretical sites in Bentonville. Blair Luft is designing her project on a piece of land off Southeast 3rd Street that's right on the Razorback Greenway and near downtown. Other sites are near Crystal Bridges, the future site of the Thaden School, and the future site of the Momentary. Blair Luft says part of the project involves understanding what makes Bentonville the way it is.
One thing that surprised me is that for Walmart, the Silicon Valley is where all their tech people are, and that there's like a direct flight from San Francisco to Bentonville, which is we're going to be going to San Francisco to look at the housing types. But just the impact that sort of these companies can have on a town and a city and the people that live there, and especially how it connects to the rest of the world.
Blair Luft says she's working with two architecture students on her affordable housing design. And while they're just getting to the design phase, Blair Luft spoke a bit about how she envisions the space.
Obviously, lots of light, lots of windows. We're on a beautiful site that's surrounded by trees, and we have a park right next to us, and then we're two blocks away from the downtown square. So having some visual connection between those, whether it's in the light or the openness or even the way that how many people you can fit in one space and the way that how people live there directly translates to what's located around them.
The third portion of the Housing Northwest Arkansas Initiative is a competition. In March, the Fay Jones School will request bids for architecture firms to design a mixed-use, attainable housing development in Bentonville.
On this week's On the Media, a look at humanity's ancient and everlasting drinking problem and how one scientist may have cooked up a new synthetic solution.
I realized there were substances out there that actually could replicate some of the positive effects of alcohol, but be much, much less harmful.
A toast to progress on the next On the Media from WNYC.
That's this morning beginning at 11 on 91.3 KUAF. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. Last year, Dr. Christian Joskowski, a public health research scientist based at the University of Arkansas, conducted an anonymous survey at the behest of a state legislator to measure sexual assault on campus. As Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports this morning, the results appear to be spurring political action.
Christian Joskowski, an associate professor of public health in the College of Education and Health Professions, investigates and researches the spectrum of human sexuality, from desire and pleasure to sexual consent and violence. In 2016, she met State Representative Greg Letting, Democrat, District 86, Fayetteville, at a Northwest Arkansas forum on sexual violence. Letting asked Joskowski if she could provide him hard data on the incidence of sexual assault on the University of Arkansas campus. She agreed.
And so I conducted an online anonymous survey that was administered to students through a number of general elective courses. That way we could get a somewhat diverse sample in terms of course majors, in terms of year in school. So we were not particularly targeting any general major or demographic in particular.
The survey was posted online last year after students had attended classes for several months. Joskowski asked class instructors and professors to encourage students to participate. More than 1,000 women and men did.
31% of the sample report of women in the sample reported non-consensual sexual contact. So this could include non-consensual touching, non-consensual oral sex, non-consensual vaginal penile sex, or non-consensual anal sex. So it did include a range of behaviors.
A majority of sexual assault, she says, occurred in a dorm, residence hall, or at a Greek life party, or campus adjacent, a public party or apartment. Joskowski concedes the percentage reported is high.
But I also think that it's important to point out that this is not brand new, that women have been experiencing pretty high rates of sexual assault for decades.
Joskowski says a majority of students have engaged in consensual sexual activity prior to enrolling in college, which continues. But students and the public remain mostly unaware of just how pervasive sexual assault is on major college campuses.
Yeah, so I asked demographic questions, so students' year in school, their age, their gender, race, ethnicity, things like that. I asked victimization questions, and that means their experiences of sexual assault. And so I had sexual assault that included non-consensual touching as well as non-consensual penetration. And then I also asked about attempts at sexual assault, so attempted penetration that wasn't completed but was still not consensual. And that I used a measure called the Sexual Experience Survey, which is a validated sort of gold standard measure, and that measure very much corresponds with how the University of Arkansas defines sexual assault according to their student code of conduct.
And certain predators, Joskowski says, fit a certain profile.
People who perpetrate sexual assault are actually more likely to have been a victim of sexual assault, particularly in childhood. So there's one factor. Alcohol consumption is also a risk factor. Specific attitudes or belief structures like views around traditional gender roles or hostility toward women, men who express sort of a what we call precarious masculinity. So this view that their masculinity is constantly being challenged and they need to prove their masculinity.
Joskowski says the culture has not traditionally held men accountable, but that's changing. With the rise of the Me Too movement, women coming forward to report sexual assault in sport, entertainment, and in the workplace.
You have gender discrepancies when it comes to power, and that manifests on college campuses as well, and that men typically have more power on college campuses. Just in general, in our culture, men are positioned as having more power, and with more power comes the opportunity to take advantage.
The survey, however, revealed most women who've experienced sexual assault do not report it.
College women experience sexual assault at higher rates during their first year on campus. And first year is a time where students are trying to fit in, they're trying to make friends, they don't want to call attention to themselves in a negative way.
Victims should report sexual assault, Joskowski says, to authorities. Under a federal statute known as Title IX, publicly funded schools are required to respond and remedy situations of sexual harassment and sexual violence. Failure to do so violates federal law, placing the institution at risk for losing federal funding. A Title IX case brought by a female UA student reported to have been raped is currently under appeal in the Eighth Circuit. On January 18th, Kristen Joskowski presented her sexual assault survey findings to the Arkansas Legislative Council's Higher Education Subcommittee. Democratic State Representative Greg Letting co-chairs the subcommittee. He said the survey results are shocking.
I think there were a few statistics that jumped out at me, namely that nearly a quarter of the people had reported two or more sexual assaults, and roughly the same number reported that their sexual assault involved two or more perpetrators. I was not necessarily surprised to learn that not many people had reported their assault to the Fayetteville Police or the UAPD, but it was surprising that not a single person had reported their assault to the police, and I think that's a sign of a potentially very big problem.
Joskowski says victims of sexual assault often fear authority as well as being ostracized by their peers. Although abstinence is widely taught, she says Arkansas is one of 14 states that do not mandate sex education as part of public school health curricula. Letting says that issue may be taken up during the next general session in 2019.
We had a couple of Republican lawmakers suggest that at our meeting because there are a number of people who believe that we can't wait to address this issue once students arrive on campus. This is the kind of thing that we need to be teaching and talking about at a much earlier age.
Kristen Joskowski says data show comprehensive sex education yields myriad positive results.
As well as healthy relationships, communication, promotion of self-esteem and so forth. There's a lot of elements to good sexuality education. So I think people focus on this, okay, you're just going to teach kids about sex. Sure, you're going to teach them how to have safe sex, how to have sex consensually, how to understand if your partner wants to have sex with you. And in fact, comprehensive sex education has shown to delay sexual initiation, meaning people who experience comprehensive sex ed are more likely to have sex later than they are if they experience abstinence education or no education at all.
Now, in late 2014, then-President Barack Obama and Vice President Joe Biden launched the It's On Us initiative, a campaign to raise awareness about ending sexual assault on college campuses. A task force report titled Not Alone revealed one in five female students reported being sexually assaulted. As a consequence, the U.S. Department of Education called for a federal investigation across campuses, including the University of Arkansas. But late last year, the U.S. Department of Education, under President Trump, revoked Obama's initiative, driving, critics say, campus sexual assault victims back into the shadows. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
What are the five moons of Pluto like? I'm Caitlin Ahrens, the Pluto Manager with the U of A Center for Space and Planetary Science. And this is Scratching the Surface. Since 1978, we have known Pluto to have a single moon, Charon. The Hubble Space Telescope in 2005 then discovered two more moons, Nix and Hydra. Then as the successful New Horizons probe flashed its way past Jupiter in 2012, two more moons were discovered and named Kerberos and Styx. So five little moons of Pluto, Charon being the largest and roundest at nearly 600 kilometers, whereas the smallest moon, Styx, is only 7 kilometers. Charon and Pluto share a large empty-spaced tidal lock point, swinging each other around. Four times the distance of Charon to Pluto houses the rest of the small, irregularly shaped moons, and they're so tightly packed in their orbits that the moons themselves almost tease each other. These smaller moons rotate chaotically. Nix and Hydra completely flip their poles as they tumble around Pluto. Discernible features and even the mass of these moons are still unknown. However, looking at the chaotic nature and possible origin of these moons would give us insight to the nature of other dwarf planets with moons, such as Haumea. For more on the Center for Space and Planetary Science, or for more segments of Scratching the Surface, spacecenter.uark.edu.
Scratching the Surface with Caitlin Ahrens, the Pluto Manager, is a production of KUAF 91.3. a listener-supported service of the University of Arkansas.
It is Sunday morning, February 11th, 2018. As she is most Sundays, Becca Martin-Brown from the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette is with me.
And what am I most Sundays?
Happy.
Sleepy, wacky, dopey. How many dwarves can we go?
But never really grumpy.
Never really grumpy.
Or bashful.
No, never bashful. All right. You remember Kent Brown?
Yes, playwright.
When I started covering theater in Northwest Arkansas, he was the chairman of the drama department at the University of Arkansas and a playwright. And I was the producer for a show called Valentine's and Killer Chili.
It took place at a restaurant that was Jerry's Restaurant.
Yes.
Now I think it's being called Smudgy's. It was a salon for a bit.
It was corner of Dixon and College, and it was a old school cafe.
You could get liver and onions.
So, I digress to say that a play by Kent Brown is being produced in Fayetteville, and I'm so excited about this. This is not Valentine's and Killer Chili. It's called In the Middle of Nowhere.
All right.
And the actors are Terry Vaughn and Tim Gilster. You've seen her in a couple of shows at Arkansas Public Theater. She was in Dead Man's Cell Phone. She was the mama. And they were both in Everyday a Visitor. And they've got Broadway experience. They've moved to Northwest Arkansas. And they decided they should start a theater company because, well, everybody else does.
They were the last ones.
They're not the last, but they're the most recent.
No complaints.
This is not a terribly funny show, as I understand it. I don't know it. She says it's about the contagious nature of fear and how it infects us like a virus. And that they chose the show because of its current political relevance. They're going to perform at the Ozark Mountain Smokehouse out on 6216. What is that?
As you're headed out towards Prairie Grove and Farmington.
And it happens at 7:30 Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Donations are welcome. It's free.
Oh.
And you can find out more on Facebook at Smokehouse Players.
Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
Over the past 5 years, our knowledge and understanding of space has exploded.
The last few years have completely changed what's possible and viewed as possible. We've detected event after event and learned unbelievable things about the universe, way more than I think anyone really expected. It is freaking amazing.
I'm Guy Raz. We're looking up into the night sky next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
The TED Radio Hour, today at 1 on 91.3. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Happy to have the militant grammarian Catherine Churls back with us in the Carver Center for Public Radio. Welcome back.
Happy to be here.
Excellent.
I was a party to an email exchange between you and one of our fans, Professor Emeritus Robert Lawrence.
Former law professor and author and all-around good person.
Yes. It had to do with the word disgruntled.
Yes.
And so what tell us about the exchange.
Disgruntled wasn't what started this email conversation. It was Robert Lawrence talking about the word discombobulated and how, you know, and when you're discombobulated, when something's discombobulated, it's a mess or it's out of sorts. So when things are going normally, are they combobulated? And as far as I know, that's not a word.
Right. But you'll be surprised as we go along that there are some very strange words like that.
And my response to him was, well, I wish that all my workers come to work gruntled. You don't want to.
As opposed to disgruntled.
Right.
Yes. Yes. So this topic, what this topic that comes up is called an unpaired word. Namely, one that looks like it should have an apparent straightforward opposite. Like combobulated.
Right.
But in practice really doesn't. Some examples are uncouth. I know we hear couth, but I think it's just people making it up.
Okay.
Well, that was couth, but no.
Yeah.
Or you're not couth.
Right.
So why not say uncouth? You're uncouth.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I've already learned something.
Disheveled. As far as
he showed up to the party very disheveled.
Or heveled.
Yes, that's true.
Distraught as opposed to trot.
Yeah, right.
Inert. Hurt.
Right. I love these.
And intrepid as opposed to trepid, I guess.
Yeah.
But there are some words and phrases that do have clear opposite forms, but are so rare and unfamiliar that they tend to remain unforgotten.
Oh.
So, I want to know what this word means, Kyle.
Mm-hmm.
Ambidextrous.
I can I laugh because there's this old bad Jerry Lewis movie where someone asks him, oh, so you're ambidextrous. He says, no, I can use my left hand and my right hand equally well.
It's going to be even more interesting when we find out that there's an opposite for ambidextrous.
Left-handed or right-handed?
No. When you're ambilivus, mm-hmm. you're equally clumsy using both hands. You're butterfingered.
Ambilivus.
I could or be. Livus. Yeah.
Dancing. When it comes to dancing, I'm ambilivus.
Interestingly, Noah Webster defined it as left-handed on both sides. I'm sure the 10% of the population who is naturally right. left-handed would take offense at that.
Yes, they would.
Anonymous. What does it mean?
Well, we don't know who you are.
Right.
Deep Throat for years was anonymous.
Right. It literally means without a name. Mm-hmm. Its opposite is onymous.
Onymous?
Onymous, which is typically used to refer to books, legal papers, artworks, musical compositions, and similar documents, the authorship of which is known without a doubt. So perhaps Shakespeare's plays are not onymous because there's doubt about who wrote
right.
them.
They're not anonymous because they're...
There's a name on them.
Right. We mm-hmm. say that Shakespeare wrote them, mm-hmm. but...
They are not onymous.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Automaton. So what does it mean?
Automaton is something that just goes through the motions every single time.
Yeah. And it moves by itself.
Right.
Right. Yeah. The opposite is heteromaton, mm-hmm. a device that relies solely on external forces for movement. So like, I guess, a pair of scissors.
Sure. Sure.
Is a heteromaton.
Right. Okay.
Catastrophe.
Catastrophe is a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an opposite to catastrophe?
Yes.
Okay.
It is when a sudden or unexpected event creates sheer joy or good fortune, which, I mean, happens too.
Sure, of course.
It's a eucastrophe.
Oh, I am using that. Eucastrophe.
Yeah. That's a eucastrophe.
What a eucastrophe. I'm rich.
Yeah.
Eucastrophe. All right.
Isn't that great? Distress.
Well, I'm worried. I'm in danger.
Mm, upset, shaken up. Yeah.
A ship is at distress when it's sinking.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
So, but if you've been through a difficult or stressful situation that left you energized mm-hmm. and compelled you to work or act better than you might otherwise do, then what would you guess? Distress, and what did we just look at?
Oh, it was catastrophe and eustress?
Eustress.
Okay. Nice.
Now, how often, though, mm-hmm. I mean, I guess difficult and stressful situations can make you feel better, but...
Oh, if you come through them.
Yeah. Okay, here's a U word that needs an mm-hmm. opposite. Now, the U is already on it.
Okay.
Euphemism, what does it mean?
Euphemism is one way of saying something else. So if you didn't want to say somebody died, he or she passed away.
Yeah,
that's
right.
A euphemism okay. for death.
What do you think the opposite might be?
Straightforward talk. I don't know. Euphemism, well, let's go back the other way. Disophism?
Perfect.
Well, perfect. Okay. So
disophism.
Disophism.
Not phism, wait.
Wait.
Dysphism.
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 And
mm-hmm.
and the definition of dysphism is then?
Is the deliberate use of an impolite or unpleasant term in place of a perfectly inoffensive one. Think Andrew Dice Clay.
Oh, okay. All right.
For those of you who
sure,
remember
sure.
Andrew Dice Clay.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Optimum. What
optimum
does that mean?
Is the ideal situation or right. condition.
Okay, now, so what is the opposite of optimist?
Pessimist.
So what do you think the opposite of optimum is?
Pessimum? Pessimum.
It's a terrible word. P-E-S-S-I-M-U-M.
Well, it should be a terrible
it should.
Word.
Yes. P-E-S-S-I-M-U-M.
So the pessimum condition is that the car's on fire as it's going off the cliff.
Be the worst or
yes.
least favorable condition. Yes,
okay.
right. Okay, placebo.
Placebo is that drug, and if it's a study that isn't actually a drug at all, it's just a stand-in that maybe makes you think because you took it that you're getting better.
And you want, and the researcher wants to find out, is it really the drug or is it the fact that they think they're going to get better that, that affects them? Placebo literally means I shall please in Latin. Oh. The opposite phenomenon is called nocebo. Nocebo.
Nocebo. So when would you use a nocebo in speech? Or
a patient reporting that they feel worse despite being given an entirely harmless treatment.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It might sound like a made-up name, but nocebo actually means in Latin, I shall harm.
Oh. Oh.
So instead of I shall please, I shall harm.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
Postpone. What does it mean?
To delay.
Right. So give me a guess at what you think the opposite of postpone is. What's the opposite of post?
The opposite is, there's an opposite to post?
Mm-hmm. An opposite to after.
Pre. Uh-huh. Prepone?
Prepone.
So if you and I were supposed to have a meeting on Thursday, but I want to prepone it to Wednesday?
Oh. Isn't that awful?
No, that's fantastic. I want to use that. I want to walk down the hall and tell my colleagues we're preponing this week's, and then just walk away and let them figure out, what does it mean if we're preponing the meeting? That's awesome.
Okay, Stockholm Syndrome. What's that?
Oh, when I've been kidnapped, think, what was her name? Patricia Hearst.
Oh, yeah.
When she was kidnapped by the SLA and then took on their cause. Mm-hmm. You sympathize and identify with your captors.
Right. And it takes its name from a hostage situation that unfolded after a bank robbery in Sweden.
Right.
In 1973. An opposite phenomenon is called the Lima Syndrome.
The Lima Syndrome, as in Lima, Peru?
Uh-huh. In which the hostage taker who gains sympathy for their hostages.
Oh, interesting. So I kidnap you, and then after a while...
I start to like you. Yeah.
Oh, I'm glad to know that one.
Its roots are in real-life hostage situation that occurred after the local militia stormed a party being held at the Japanese embassy in the Peruvian capital in 1996.
And then they end up liking the people that they're holding hostage. Mm-hmm. And
you know, and at least from fiction, I think that's common. And maybe it's just fiction.
I was about to say, it seems like I've seen movies where at least one of the captors...
Gets
has a heart
the Lima
of
syndrome,
right, and then helps them out.
Right.
Yeah.
So, Kyle, you've kind of, what's the word, tipped my joke, but I want to tell you. The discussion reminds me of my favorite airport sign.
Okay.
This one from the Milwaukee airport. In a place where travelers are invited to sit and put their shoes back on or store their computers again after the TSA check, the sign above it says recombobulation area.
It's perfectly done, right? Because you're getting back. You've been discombobulated. You want to become combobulated. Yeah, I love that. Our Middleton grammarian is Catherine Sherrills.
On the next How I Built This, we meet the guy who had the idea to start Airbnb after letting someone he had just met stay in his house.
I go to bed. I'm staring at the ceiling thinking, what have I done? There's a complete stranger in my living room.
Yeah.
What if he's psychotic?
And on Planet Money, what happens when you take away a politician's power to raise taxes? It's an hour of economics and innovation on Planet Money.
And How I Built This from NPR.
Planet Money, How I Built This, tonight, beginning at 7 on 91.3 KUAF. That's right after Fresh Air Weekend that begins at 6 on 91.3. If you'd like to see a complete schedule of KUAF's programming, you can go to KUAF.com. And if you ever miss editions of Ozarks at Large, you can take us with you. We are a podcast, and you can subscribe to us for free through services like Stitcher and iTunes. We're also available through the free NPR One app, the free KUAF app, and you can find past full editions of our show as well as individual stories and interviews at OzarksAtLarge.com and KUAF.com. Good morning. This is Sunday, February 11th. Yes, February 11th, 2018.
It's already the middle of the month.
Yeah, and it's a short month at that.
No.
That's Katie Hendrickson lamenting with me that we are rapidly moving through February. She's the host of Note with Katie Hendrickson every Sunday through Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. And yes, indeed, Katie, we are moving straight through February.
I can't believe it.
But I'm also going to be happy when the winter is over and we get spring again. That's going to be really nice.
Well, that could be middle of next week.
It could be now, and then it could go back. Right. We're going to have that time period where it just shifts back and forth for a while, and everyone gets really excited, and it's like, spring is here, and then, oh, no, wait, it's not here yet.
And we all sneeze.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
But it's a whole brand new week for you on Of Note.
So many things happening. First off, I do Arts Beat segments, so a chance to talk and go in depth with arts happenings in our area. And 21C Bentonville has a new exhibit that's up right now. It's called Labor and Materials. And there's a talk with the chief curator of 21C, all of the hotels, Alice Gray Stites, and she is in town to give a talk. And I'll be on site to talk to her, and I'll have that interview next week. But let's hear a little bit more about where the concept of this exhibit comes from. There's a quote from a book called The Second Machine Age, Work, Progress, and Prosperity in a Time of Brilliant Technologies. So the authors, Eric Brynjolfsson and Andrew McAfee, they say, if the first machine age helped unlock the forces of energy trapped in chemical bonds to reshape the physical world, the real promise of the second machine age is to help unleash the power of ingenuity. So this exhibit is all shaped around these premises. And actually, there's so many fascinating works that 21C always, like, they have, it's like always amazing contemporary artists that have come together.
And, you know, there's a reason it's called 21C Museum Hotel. I mean, yes, you can sleep there.
And it's a museum that's open 24 hours a day. You can go in there anytime.
Absolutely free. And generally, the collections that rotate at 21C are up for about half a year, right? I think six months
is how long they stay up. So it'll be up for a while. And it's just a great opportunity because you can go up there, view the exhibit. Then you can go next door to the Hive. You can have a cocktail in their lounge. You can have a nice dinner. So it's a really nice opportunity.
Also a chance for people to be interactive and get a couple of tickets to this pretty cool APO show concert that's going to be next weekend.
Yeah, there's been a lot of excitement. Kyle, you had a chance to speak with Erjean Kong, the violinist, in this concert. It's all based around the Arkansas native composer Florence Price. You've heard me talking about her as well because there's a Trillium coming up later this month featuring the chamber music of Florence Price.
Then Fort Smith Symphony in May.
Yes. So there's so many things happening with her music, and it's great to see this resurgence. I actually have tickets for that concert, so it's really easy. If you want to be considered for tickets, just hop on over to my Facebook page and like my page. I'm collecting those names. I also have a post there at Facebook. And if you're already a fan of me on Facebook, you can participate and enter the contest by finding that post.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's going to be an exciting concert. And this week's New Yorker, it finally, you know, arrived in mailboxes with the Alex Ross about her and Fort Smith Symphony.
I get the New Yorker, so I was like so excited to open it up. And I actually, Kyle, when I was putting together notes about talking to you this week, I had the New Yorker and I was going to read from it because he talks. So Erjean Kong actually did a whole recording of the two violin concertos, and he raves about her recording of it.
He does, yeah.
So that was really exciting. So yeah, Florence Price, it's Erjean is also going to be on Of Note this week as well. So you've heard her on Ozarks at Large. You'll hear more this week in Of Note.
You can't get too much Erjean Kong.
No.
That's my thought.
That's true.
All right. Speaking of interviews, you have another one coming up this week.
Yes. So another violinist, actually, the wonderful Anna Kiko Myers, American violinist, and her most recent recording features a Rautavaara piece. He's a Finnish composer, really well known. He died in 2016, but right before he died, actually, she commissioned a work from him. Hmm. It's called Fantasia, and that's the title track on the album. So I got to talk to her all about working with Rautavaara. She actually went over to play the work for him in person, and she said that he came up to her and was repeatedly saying, I wrote such beautiful music. He was just so excited about this piece coming together, and it's a beautiful testament of his life and his work. And so I'm really happy to bring that conversation to you with Anna Kiko Myers about Fantasia. Also on that recording is a Szymanowski violin concerto, so it's really beautiful.
I'm assuming we'll hear the conversation and the piece.
Yes.
That's so cool. Yes. You'll get to hear her talk about it and then hear it.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. 8 to 10, Sunday through Thursday night, Of Note with Katie Hendrickson, or Sunday through Thursday mornings, 9 to 11 on KUAF2. Now get some rest.
Okay, thank you, Kyle.
Thank you, Katie.
Fayetteville restaurant owners Carrie and Cindy Arcega have completed a real estate purchase in South Fayetteville, paving the way for a new restaurant concept. This is the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal report. I'm Paul Gatling. The owners of Fayetteville-based Arcega's Coffee Roasters paid $590,000 for the commercial building at 481 South School Avenue. The building previously housed Greenhouse Grill. Carrie Arcega said after an extensive remodel of the property, he'll introduce a new restaurant to the market, featuring a coffee bar and serving breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Alcohol will also be served. Arcega said he hopes to have the building renovation complete in 6 months. Arcega's opened its first coffee store in 1992 and now has four retail locations in the city at 548 West Dixon Street, 200 West Center Street, and inside the Fayetteville Public Library and the University of Arkansas Law Library. You can read more about the Arcega's plans in the current issue of the Business Journal. You can find the digital version online and for free at nwabusinessjournal.com. This is the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. We also reported last week on new developments for Danville-chartered Chambers Bank. Company officials say they are in the process of relocating the bank's loan office in Benton County from Bentonville to a more high-traffic location in Rogers. I had a chance to visit with Chief Operating Officer Erica Preston about that move and also about the state of the banking market in Northwest Arkansas entering 2018.
We're very excited. We are currently housed in a temporary location, and we are moving into a permanent location on New Hope Road across the street from Walgreens, so it'll be very easy for everyone to find, near all the shopping and restaurants, and we are so excited to be more visible in the market and be back in Rogers and to be able to really offer additional products and services to our customers, and we can't wait to get moved in.
Right. What is the timeline that you're working on? I assume you've got to get approved, regulatory approval, and all that good stuff.
Correct, Paul. We're going through all the standard regulatory approvals, and we've submitted everything, and we'll be sending out all the required notifications to customers, et cetera. We hope to be in there by the first week of June is our goal.
And so what does that do, for your plans in Benton County? I know, it's my understanding you're going to keep that branch long-term in Rogers. So what does that do for your plans for Bentonville, if there are any? I know you've had some land along South 52nd Street there next to Aloft Hotel, which is in Rogers, for a couple of years. Are there still plans to build there or maybe somewhere else in Bentonville on down the road?
We had initially looked at 52nd Street, and that was our intention, and then the property became available that we're moving into now on New Hope Road, working with Chuck Sharp and his group, and partnering with them, we felt like we could really move into that space much quicker and be fully available in Benton County to our customers and hopefully gain new customers as well, and that would give us the opportunity to also look in Bentonville proper to expand locations there. We plan to look at other places in Benton County. Northwest Arkansas is a huge part of our footprint for Chambers Bank, and Benton County is a huge part of Northwest Arkansas, and we want to have the presence there that the activity in that market demands and that the customer base demands, and so that's our intention.
Describe the banking market in Northwest Arkansas right now. I mean, entering the new year or 1 month into the new year, I guess, just compared to the market 3 to 5 years ago. There are more banks, of course, but what are the other big changes in the dynamic of the banking market of Northwest Arkansas from your view?
I think we have seen more banks. You have seen some mergers and acquisitions, and with that, anytime there's changes, I think people look to see if they want to continue banking where they are or they have new opportunities. We have some new people moving into Northwest Arkansas. We're also very fortunate to live there and work there, and I think there is a lot of opportunity for banks in Northwest Arkansas, and that's why you see so many moving there and expanding their presence. And we feel like we really have a niche with our hometown service, and then all of these additional products and services that we plan to be able to offer and offer the technology to our customers. And I feel like there is so much opportunity in Northwest Arkansas in general, but in Benton County specifically, that's why you see so many banks moving there. But it's a great customer base and obviously a great place to live, and we're excited to have a larger presence there.
Right. A lot of people moving here, and that includes the banks. A lot of competition in the market. You know that. Where do you see the growth for lending in Northwest Arkansas? Where do you see the opportunities for Chambers Bank?
We're very strong in commercial lending, and we'd like to do more small business loans. I think really help partner with different businesses and help them grow in the community. And we are a community bank, and that's what's important to us, and that's what we want to help do, is help promote and grow the grow the economy in Northwest Arkansas and help the members of our community. And I think there's lots of opportunities, lots of places to do that.
And that's Erica Preston, the Chief Operating Officer of Chambers Bank, discussing the bank's plans in the Benton County market. You can also find that story on our website at nwabusinessjournal.com. Stick around, we'll have more right after this.
Support for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report is provided by the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. More at ArkansasStateChamber.com. First Security is proud to be only in Arkansas, and it shows in your banking experience. They offer smart solutions for personal and business banking, plus convenient services and community investment. That's because First Security is 100% focused on serving customers all across the state and nowhere else. It's local banking with local commitment. First Security. Bank better. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender. And OneCom. OneCom, providing voice and data solutions that adapt to today's demand with tomorrow's technology. Communication tools that integrate mobility with the desktop and merge wired networks with the wireless technology. More at one-comm.com or 479-715-8800.
Finally today, staying on the bank beat, it was another good lending year for Arvest Bank. The company announced Thursday that for the second year in a row, its mortgage division originated more than $1 billion in purchase money mortgages in 2017. The numbers look like this. As of December 31st last year, Arvest had closed a total of 6,684 purchase money loans with a total loan value of $1.14 billion. Compare that to 2016, and the totals were 6,222 loans with a total value of $1 billion. And that's our time today for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. You can follow our reporting of business and political news at nwabusinessjournal.com and on Facebook and Twitter. You can find our social media pages by searching NWABJ. As always, we appreciate you tuning in. I'm Paul Gatling. Thanks for listening.
And tomorrow at noon and 7 p.m. on the next daily edition of Ozarks at Large, the evolution of medicine has provided many triumphs, but also problems.
Yet I always was drawn to the other face of medicine, the cruel, the dangerous, the poorly thought out, and the failures.
Tricia Starks, Associate Professor of History at the University of Arkansas, offers a preview of her lecture about bad medicine. That's on Monday's edition of Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 on 91.3 KUAF, a service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Hiawassee. Weekend Ozarks at Large and Ozarks at Large are productions of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. You can find out more about our show online at OzarksAtLarge.com and KUAF.com.